and welcome to The Garden Show. I'm Molly Kabler.
And I'm Kitty Labonte.
And we're here to talk about herbs this morning. We're very excited about this topic, but we wanted to start with the weather.
Mm-hmm. It was glorious yesterday. I'd say, I don't know, I didn't see an official temperature, but let's say it was pretty darn hot. I had all sorts of shelters opened up, like the greenhouse was opened up, the zucchini little house was opened up, because I was pretty sure that whatever was in there, that it was just going to cook. And I also watered like mad yesterday. So, and it's you know, it's cooler this morning, and it looks like there's some high clouds out, so it might stay cooler today. But still, the verb and noun is water.
Yeah, so when it's this hot, and yesterday I think it was officially in the 80s, I saw 80 or 81, which is wild, your potted plants, your container plants are using water like crazy, unlike normal times. So there's a huge difference between 50s and 80. So you will probably want to water everything if you didn't yesterday. And even if you did yesterday, they might all be ready for water again.
Yeah, I watered things that were, you know, in containers that kept them warmer a couple of times yesterday, actually, once in the morning, and then I watered them again in the evening. But I will probably go out and actually water some of the vegetable beds this morning. Even though they set down really deep roots and they're doing pretty well, it doesn't hurt to give them a little extra drink.
Right. They, you know, this is a time we all need an extra drink. Oh, wait, we're not going there. This is the garden show. So, this is all about herbs. I got a great transition going here because one of my favorite herbs right now is the big fuzzy one. And we're going to talk about mints and start with actually seeds. But I want to just do this side note to say that the mojitos that you can make from those mints are incredible. All right. We're talking about herbs in the garden. We're very excited about this. We would also welcome your call at 747-5877. And thanks for those of you who last week phoned in your support for the station. And we were told that there were a lot of people that mentioned how much they appreciate the garden show. And we appreciated hearing that very much. But again, 747-5877 is the number if you want to join us on the garden show. Or if you want to call and talk to Becky and ask your questions, she'll let us know what your question is if you don't want to actually speak live on the air. So we've got options for you. But we wanted to start out talking about the herbs that are easiest to grow from seed, because sometimes that's the most economical thing. And the holy grail for many people in the herbs from seeds are basil and cilantro. And basil, just realize you can't grow basil here outside. Okay, maybe there's some couple of exceptions, but for the most part, that is not a thing, growing basil outside in Southeast Alaska.
No, it's a great plant to start from seed indoors and actually just keep in your house or keep in your greenhouse. I know people who have been successful kind of constructing little shelters for them. Basil out in their garden bed, but you're still kind of having a shelter over it. In some exceptional summers, all it's going to take is you know, a nice set of Rime, but I wouldn't ever count on that. It's much easier just to have it in pots someplace and move it around. And I've grown a few different kinds from seed, and I feel like most of them actually grow pretty darn well. The key for us with basil is it just doesn't like our super soggy, cool weather. So don't do anything that mimics super soggy, cool weather in your house or in your greenhouse. And basil should be pretty happy.
Yeah, it can end up being subject to molds and fungus. It's a little sensitive to that stuff. And then the other thing is aphids love basil. So those are a couple of the tricks. So inside in a window, you probably won't struggle much with the molds and funguses so much. And you may not have the aphid problem either. So those are a couple other reasons to grow your basil inside.
So I this year I grew a few different kinds. I grew the big fat-leaved sweet basil. I think it's Mammoth Sweet. And I also grew a smaller one called Aroma. And I like both of them. It seems like the bigger leaf one, I have to be a little bit more careful not to have the leaves wet. And particularly when it was cooler, the taller one with the smaller leaves seems more, you know, tolerant of some of those kinds of conditions. But I did nip them all off. I pinched them all back to a leaf node, so where the leaf joins a stem, and I made pesto out of that pile, and I'm hoping for more branching and more production out of those plants now.
Great. That sounds wonderful. Yeah, I've grown the purple basil in the past and Thai basil. If you just want to start, if you're starting new with basil, just grow the regular kind and sort of calibrate what you need to do and then branch out, I would say, into some of the varieties. They can be just a little more touchy than sort of that regular mainstream sweet basil. And you're probably going to get the biggest productivity out of the larger leaved basils than the small ones, just in terms of volume of product.
Yeah, just give those a little more room, like maybe, especially the biggest leaf basils. I've noticed one per pot is better. I can put a few in the smaller leaved ones in a pot, but the big ones, they seem to like their own pot.
So the other plant that a lot of people want to grow is cilantro. It's so tasty, and it has just so much impact in your cooking for a small amount of the leaves and stems. The issue, and everybody struggles with cilantro, and they're like, oh, I just don't know how to do it because it always bolts. It always bolts. And guess what? It's not you. It always bolts. It is the fastest bolting thing probably that we grow. So when you grow cilantro, you seed it up and you harvest it as soon as it looks edible, because the next time you check, it's going to bolt.
Right. I actually have given up on cilantro because it was frustrating me. I was just like, I do not need this pain. I just buy cilantro when I need it. But yes, I agree. I know if you're really an aficionado of cilantro, you just keep planting it and just keep eating it and the world goes on. But I realized for me, I was like, this just tests my frustration level, and gardening is about being happy, not being about frustrated. So I was like, give it up, girl.
Yeah. So one other tip about cilantro, if you do let it go to seed and you get the seed, it's easy to harvest those seeds and grow the next version, right? I mean, to grow another round of them. So you can save seed pretty readily from cilantro if it goes. But I'm with Kitty. It's not worth the time and energy and space for me because of how quickly it bolts. But it sure is tasty.
Yes. One thing I do like to grow from seed is dill. I love growing dill. Dill you can put in pots or you can put out in your garden bed. It doesn't need a lot of fussing in my book. I know some people have some trouble with slugs with dill. So far, I have not had trouble, knocking on wood now. But I tend to grow a reasonable amount of it. I love the smell of dill. And it pairs perfectly with another resource we have around here, which is salmon. So I don't think you can go wrong with having too much dill.
I have almost nothing to add except for that I do struggle with the slugs on dill. The little ones seem to find it and mow it down pretty readily. If you have, if you're struggling with slugs, then what you really want to do is grow your dill in a pot, and it doesn't mind that at all. It can grow in your garden. It can grow on your deck, in your greenhouse. Dill's easy, and it's easy from seed. So that's a great one.
Oh, sorry. I've grown a few different varieties. This year, I'm growing Hera. You know, I actually, it's one of those Greek goddess sort of names. But I've also grown fern leaf, and I've grown Ducat. And I've had pretty reasonable luck with all of them. It's just happened to be these were the seeds I had this year. So growing that, and it looks lovely.
So mine, I saved my seeds, and I think it was fern leaf, but I don't remember. So dill's another really easy one. If you like dill seed, you can grow it all the way and harvest the seeds, besides using the pungent leaves. And then you can also plant those seeds again. So it's an easy one to, once you have it, if you at least let a plant or two go to seed, you'll have the seed to plant next year, or the seed to use if you like dill seed in your cooking.
Yeah, one of the things about this variety I'm growing this year is it says it's very slow to actually produce flowers, which is fine because I mostly am using the leaves, but I will eventually get flowers. Some of the other ones I know go to flower heads a lot earlier, and I can't remember exactly which one it was, but I think it was Ducat that went to flower heads pretty fast.
So if you're planning to save seeds or you're looking to harvest the seeds, it would be good to read your catalog and choose the one that will go to seed. And if you really don't care about the seeds and you just want the dill flavor from the green herb leaves, then go with the ones that bloom later, because you will have a longer season for that dill flavor. Well, there's a lot of great herbs to grow, and seeding, getting them from seed is not the way to go. Getting them from a start is the way to go. Either buy the starts from your local nursery or get a start from your neighbor. And the most reliable one, I think, in Sitka and this outside coast is what we call Greek oregano. I got mine from somebody, so I have no idea why it's Greek. I just know it lasts for decades in the same spot. It's pretty well behaved, and it's really robust. I've tried a couple of other oreganos that I've purchased that were supposedly, like, one was had a varietal name of hot and spicy, and then sometimes you can get, like, a variegated one or something. And those are fun to try, but they're just not as hardy and persistent as that good old Greek oregano. And Greek oregano is tasty. You can use it raw in a salad. You can use it to flavor sauces. It's beautiful as it gets ready to bloom in your cut flowers as a great green filler, and also it smells so good. So I just think you can't go wrong with that plant.
I agree. I have the same type, and I may have bought mine originally, or someone may have given it to me, but it's the same one, and I've divided it once and just moved it to two different spots, but I totally agree. It's super well-behaved, stays where you put it, doesn't take over the earth, and actually has a really nice scent. So remember, this is the call-in version of the Garden Show. If you have questions or if you have success stories to share about herbs, please give us a ring at 747-5877.
There's other great herbs to grow. They might not be quite as tough as the Greek oregano, but you likely could get one and have it for multiple years, if not forever. And one of those is sage. I think sage is a gorgeous plant in the garden that has beautiful big gray-green leaves, and it's certainly tasty in a sauce. So look and see if you're getting one and you have a choice, some that have that say they're a little hardier, because in our climate, you might have it for several years and suddenly it's gone, or you might struggle to keep it over the winter.
So I've had the best luck with the all green sages. When I've tried the variegated or the tricolors or whatever, they don't seem to make it quite as well.
Yeah, again, the same thing. Those variegated, the ones that are selected for the beautiful colors, not so tough. So another super tough one, maybe not literally an herb, but sort of in that category, chives, of course, very easy to grow here and very long lasting. And in fact, you'll suddenly realize, wait a minute, I have so many chives, I've got to dig these out and share my garden bed with some other plant. So chives are a good one. And then the thymes are another. Thyme is one, and there's lots of variety of thymes. And I would say the same thing holds for thyme as sage and oregano. The varieties don't look that great. Don't last that great in terms of wintering over. But your standard thyme and creeping thyme, I've got both of those, and they've held out through the last couple of winters. And they are doing well, and they're great in sauces and cooking.
So I have a couple of lemon thymes, but I put them in a pot with my rosemaries because I know I'm going to have to protect those if I want to keep them. And so, yes, I was like, I've tried to screw up rosemary various years. So now I know, and we'll talk more about rosemary later, but I put the lemon thyme in that pot so that I knew I had to put that pot someplace where it was going to get protected from the extremes of cold and wet, and probably wet is probably one of the bigger things. And then I'm hoping I can keep it over, but I know I can't keep it over probably just in my garden.
Right. This year, I have a thyme in a pot, and it's lived in my greenhouse over the winter and then comes back out in the spring. And it likes the dry. So I think it's not susceptible, as you were saying, to the cold, it's the wet that is the problem. So if you have a sheltered place to put your thyme, that's a good way to go. So let's talk about rosemaries. It's similar. Rosemaries don't mind the water during the season, but they're tender here. And so I don't know a lot of people that manage to keep the rosemaries going in the garden.
No, I usually have them in pots. I've had them they look like they're going to make it, right? So it's like December and the rosemary still looks good outside. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, that plant is dead. So don't be fooled. It needs that extra oomph, and it happens every year. It's not just cold years. So I honestly think it's really is the water. And I've had that happen with a whole variety of rosemaries that come through. So I basically am opportunistic with rosemaries. I'll buy like whatever variety happens to show up in town. And I've tested a number of them that way. But in general, yep, just count on having to protect them if you want to keep them. And I love the smell of rosemary. So it's glorious to have in a pot someplace you're going to wander by it.
The other thing about rosemary is what I find, it's kind of a woody plant and it doesn't grow really fast like some of the other herbs. And so buy the biggest one you can get. Buying a tiny rosemary isn't necessarily the thing because it doesn't grow really quickly and you more than likely will struggle to winter it over. So it's one of the rare ones that start from a biggish plant, and as you get toward the end of the season, sure, you can try and winter it over, but you might just harvest it. You can cut rosemary and keep it cut in the fridge for quite a long time, or dry it, and it's one of the herbs that's more flavorful, I think, even in the dried format. So we have a question about rosemary, and the question is, do you have any tips for rosemary and dill sharing a spot, and what about the spacing of that?
I've noticed that my dill actually likes to have a lot of space. So I like to give my dill some serious space. So it depends. I mean, if we're talking about a pot, just make sure the pot's big enough. You can have them. You know, you can kind of put the dill up on some kind of a little, a trainer, a stick, a support. So it, you know, gives the rosemary some sun. But hey, why not? I've never had a problem with them like duking it out. How about you, Molly?
No, I don't think I've ever had them sharing a space, though. So I generally have grown them each in their own pot. Rosemary, I was talking about sort of killing it off for the winter. Your other option is just to keep it as long as you can and remember that you have it and use it. Because it does seem to be like the late spring when it gives up the ghost. So sometimes it seems like you're going to make it through much of the winter and then suddenly you aren't with your rosemary. So, yeah.
You know, what's funny about, so rosemary is fussy that way, but I have had impressive luck with lavender over the years, growing in my garden just in a bed. I had one plant for like 17 years and I was like, okay, this is not what I expected. You know, it doesn't look like lavender fields like you would see in pictures from France, but you know, it looks okay.
Well, after this isn't France, darn it. Or maybe happily it's not France.
But I've had impressive luck. I've just dig those right into the garden bed and it makes it. I don't know. I don't have a good answer for, you know, what's the difference between those two plants. Although lavender just seems to be a little more tolerant of that sogginess.
I have a lavender that's several years old, but it's been in a pot. And I take it out. I take it into a more sheltered space for the winter, not inside, but a place where it's not so wet. And then I just bring it back out, and it's just getting ready to bloom right now. And I haven't tracked down it exactly, but I bet I've had it for at least 5 years. And then I cut it back and pot it on, and it seems to be doing fine. And if you're someone who really wants to grow lavender, what I would recommend is just try the different ones as they come through Commerce or order them. But just keep trying until you find one that's a little tougher, a little hardier, or likes your situation.
Here, I thought you were going to tell them that they should move if they really like to grow lavender.
Well,
Southern Oregon's nice for lavender. But It does. I think I've been actually pretty impressed with it. And if I had several plants in the bed, I might actually have some nice piles of flowers. Right now, it's just like, oh my gosh, it's still growing. I'm so impressed. And you have flowers. So, you know, and the Munstead, it was a Munstead dwarf that I had for years. That did all right. And I can't honestly remember that the tag is long gone from this one, but they do stick around. But I have a really sunny site and it's in a raised bed, so it's also well drained. So consider those things.
So we've had a couple calls and we have a couple of questions. And one of them is, do we have tips on harvesting and drying herbs? And we sure do. But first, I'd like to just do a quick run through of some other herbs that are pretty reliable here and from my experience worth growing. And it's always worthwhile trying new ones. But we mentioned the mints and haven't really gone there. There's lots of varieties of mints. So try them, keep them in a pot because you will be mad if you don't. I am experiencing the good and the bad of mints. I have three pots of different mints that are really great. And I have the big fuzzy green one that may or may not be called Egyptian mint or apple mint or pineapple mint, taking over my life. So don't follow my example. Well, follow my example of my tidy pots of mints because you will just not struggle in terms of the mint taking over everything else. But there's lots of mints. So there's several culinary mints. There's chocolate, you know, all these different things. So just try them and taste them and see what you like. I find some of them are pretty sharp. And I don't like them as well. So that's why I like that big fuzzy one. I think it's minty, but not sharp.
Yeah, I have a spearmint that I really like for some purposes and a peppermint that I like for others. The peppermint is actually a ground cover in one spot. Ooh, I used that word. And I put it there because I could, if I walk on it, it smells good. And I plan on walking on it. It's like, whatever, this mint can deal with whatever I give to it. So I walk on it. It's right by the front door. It smells really good. But I do rip it out by the handfuls when it starts getting too crazy. And the spearmint, I should have kept that thing in a pot. It's starting to eat my garlic bed.
Oh yeah. So you're like me. You've strayed from what you knew about keeping the mints in a pot.
Yes, this is definitely follow my words, not my actions. Yeah.
So there's a couple other mints that aren't quite so crazy, and that would be the cat mints, which are mints. We don't tend to use them for culinary purposes for people, but cats like them. And that's not the same as catnip, which is another mint that you can grow and the cats do go crazy for. So neither of those seem to be quite as invasive as the culinary mints. I particularly like the cat mints, not the catnip, because it's the beautiful flowers and they're really good for bees too. So cat mints are a well-behaved, more a plant to use as a perennial. And then the other one is Melissa officinalis, which is the lemon balm, which is also a mint. And people use that for teas and flavoring too, that lemony, minty flavor.
Right. And don't forget parsley. I don't think we might have mentioned parsley or we might have just thought about parsley. But parsley is a great one. You can actually grow it from seeds or from starts. It is a biennial, so, you know, great over winter, but it will start flowering and bearing seeds the second year. So go for that one. Use it up. But it doesn't bolt as fast as like cilantro. So it's definitely a good one.
Yeah.
So, yes, harvesting is a good idea. That's often what people forget.
Right. And the other thing I'll say, and then let's answer the question about harvesting and drying. I think it's always great to experiment a little bit and try a new herb or two and see what you think. I was gifted a feverfew, which is an herb, and it works as a perennial. It's pretty hardy. I'm on my second year of it, so I don't have a long trajectory about it, but it's a beautiful plant in the garden. It's a chrysanthemum. And then also this year we started anise hyssop from seed, and it is beautiful as well. And I'm just still getting my starts going, so I don't have a lot to say about it, but it's been awfully fun to try a couple of new herbs that I haven't grown in a while.
Right, and they smell wondrous. So one of the plants I consider an herb, and maybe other people consider a pesky thing, are nettles. And so I'll start with, that's what I've been harvesting. So I wear my gloves when I harvest nettles, and I use scissors, and I grow them in a pot, a really big pot, because if they start escaping and you forget where they are, it hurts. But what I do is I cut them, and I've been cutting them mostly on dry days. If it's too wet, it's like, why bother trying this? So I cut them, and I'll either hang them up, I'll tie them in loose bunches and just hang them up someplace dry where there's a lot of air circulation. So I've used the greenhouse for that. I've actually, because I have a heat exchange pump in the basement, I've used that area as well. And yesterday I actually laid some nettles out in the sun to let them dry. So basically my goal is to get them dry.
So that's your number one tip for harvesting and drying herbs, is in our climate, finding a way to get them dry before they mold. So that's, nothing too close. Sort of the big recommendation is always on something that's a screen, but often we don't have those things laying around, and we don't necessarily want to have that if we're just using it one time. So bundles, just tying loose bundles of herbs and hanging them up. You hang them with the cut stems up so that the oils and the flavoring go down into the leaves and the tips of the plants. And then as soon as they're dry, you want to jar them up because they start deteriorating. So hanging herbs to use all winter long, pretty soon you're going to have a dusty, dry thing that doesn't have a lot of flavor.
Yeah, I use leftover jars, so basically my recycled jars from peanut butter or whatever, I will use for dried mint or dried nettles or dried whatever. It works pretty well. I also will occasionally make different liqueurs with some of my herbs, and that's another good way to store them.
Herbs can also experiment with storing them in oil, so now you have an herb flavored oil to cook with. You can also freeze them. Once they're frozen, they tend to have decent flavor, but of course they don't look like much, so those would be your herbs destined for stews, soups, something that you're going to cook them in. And the other thing is, don't wait until the end of the season. You want to harvest it when it's growing rapidly and probably just before it blooms for the for the best quality of herb for culinary purposes.
One of the reasons why I'm harvesting nettles now is, one, I'm harvesting them just before they're flowering, but I'm harvesting them again just above like a leaf node, so like where the leaf joins the stem. And what I want that plant to do is then branch again and get some more vegetative growth so that I can harvest more of those leaves. And if you wonder what I'm using nettles for, I mix it in a tea blend with my mint and a few other things around. You can also eat them fresh. But yes, wear your gloves when you first harvest them. But yeah, if you harvest now, you can encourage things to branch.
I think the thing that you mentioned just now is the key thing about your herbs is, use them fresh. They have so much impact on whatever you put them in. And if I'm not cooking a sauce or a dish, just throw them in with your greens that you're harvesting from your garden. Your chives in inch or 2 inch lengths, and your fresh oreganos, parsleys, and thymes can all be tossed in, if not in a dressing, just into the mix with your greens. And it's a super flavorful way to use those things, and such a taste of summer.
I definitely agree that use them now, harvest them fresh. Other thing I was going to say is, don't forget you can make pesto out of a variety of these things. So that's the other way I've kept my basil, of course, is by making pesto. And I did finally learn a trick that you can actually put it in a jar, put some olive oil on the top, and freeze it if you want to hoard that pesto for the winter. So yes, I'm all for about eating fresh, but I also like to have a little bit of that herb taste later on in the year.
And if you have a lot of other herbs that you want to try, or that you have a lot of, you can make a pesto out of almost anything. So experiment. Use that garlic. Use that parsley. any number of your garden components you can use. Well, we had, Kitty, a quick question about deadheading rhododendrons, and this is certainly the time to do so. And what you want to do is get in there and pick those flower heads off. They can snap at, there's a little, go in and snap them off right at the inflorescence point. They come off kind of easily. It's a bit of work, but it really makes your rhododendrons look great, and it'll make them create their buds better for next year. So we're just wrapping it up. We'll be back next week on The Garden Show. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. I'm Molly Kabler.
And I'm Kitty Labonte. Thanks for joining us today.
KCAW Sitka.